Hi, this is Philip Chafin. I have this new CD out called Something Real Special, and I'm here with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, shalom, damn it! This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And you know that I am thrilled always to go on the Dave's Gone By radio program to talk to actors and directors and singers. I've talked to wonderful people in theater and cabaret, and I will be talking to someone right now who straddles both worlds, because he is a cabaret singer, and he also records all the big Broadway and off-Broadway shows, because he is part of a company called P.S. Classics. And we'll get into the name of it and what they do, but boy, oh boy, these people have been responsible for saving productions of things like The Revival of Passion that was just done, Pacific Overtures, and Nine, and Great Gardens, which wasn't a revival, it was a new thing. Plus, this man has four albums of his own on the label, and he is a former singer for Ray Conniff. Oh my goodness, so many questions to ask Mr. Philip Chafin in the neighborhood. Welcome and shalom.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're most welcome. And so, what projects are you working on right this second today, right now?
Well, we just finished recording an off-Broadway show that played about 3 years ago called Yank, written by David and Joe Zelnick. And we're in negotiations and talking about a play that's being, musical being done at The Public.
Which show is that?
It's called Fun Home.
Oh, Fun Home. That's with Lisa Kron and those folks. Yes.
Yes.
Well, let's go right into it. You're trying to, or you just put the finishing touches, the ribbon on the CD of Yank, which they were trying to bring to Broadway. I don't know if that's going to happen. But 3 years after it was first produced, now you're doing the CD. What goes into getting all the actors back, getting the orchestrations? What did you have to do to make that happen?
It took a while. We did a Kickstarter. Well, at least the brothers, Zelnick, did a Kickstarter, and they had lots of fans, and we went in and decided to do it. We got Jonathan Tunick to do the new orchestrations for us.
Why don't you tell people who Jonathan Tunick is, please?
Jonathan Tunick is the orchestrator who, gosh, he's done probably every Sondheim musical, I believe. He's just one of the most prolific orchestrators, and it's one of those people that everyone goes to, and we were just very lucky to get him. He liked the score and liked the songs, and so we were very happy to get him.
Well, of course, but what I'm trying to also understand is that the brothers who wrote the musical did a Kickstarter campaign to get it on the CD. You didn't come to them and say, do it with us? How does that work?
Well, we came to them and said we can bring in a certain amount of money, and also my partner could produce it, and we would like to put it on our label. We need a way of raising the money in order to get it on produced, and they said they had a couple of investors that they knew, and also they said we could do a Kickstarter campaign and see if we could get the fans to help us raise money, and they did.
I know sometimes people don't want to discuss exact cost, but I would be curious, how much money does it take to put an off-Broadway show ultimately onto a CD? No, how much?
As I laugh, it varies. Off-Broadway could be $100 to $150.
Not dollars, you're talking $150,000?
Yes.
Is that because of union costs for the... Where's that money going?
A lot of it goes to the unions, the musicians, the actors, for orchestrating it. I mean, because you got to reorchestrate everything.
How come you can't? Why can't you use the original orchestrations?
Well, because we decided to get Jonathan Tunick to come in and reorchestrate.
Oh, okay.
So we had to do all new. The studio cost, and then there's a lot of preparation afterwards. You know, all the stuff afterwards. I mean, and that's Yank, since it was 3 years later, it was a little bit cheaper, but a lot of it is the unions, and I'm a union member, so I can't say, union, but, you know.
Well, you're not balking at it, and it was feasible between the Kickstarter and what you guys brought to the table. You were able to do it in a way that also wasn't just one piano accompaniment, like so many cabaret CDs tend to be these days, where you can do the full thing, as it were.
Yeah. And this way, if anyone ever wants to do the show, they can, you know, we have orchestrations for it. So it works out.
Has Yank ceased having Broadway aspirations? Is that off the table now?
I do not know that part of the sure. process. All I do is record it.
And so, okay, I mean, most of us who love the theater know one recording session very well. We all know the film that they did, the Pennebaker film of Company, with all the people, and they have until, was 11 at night until 4 in the morning to get all the songs done, except for Elaine Stritch, who they bring back a day later. How does it work now in the more modern day?
Well, it's Equity Rules says that we have the actors for 8 hours. We can spread them out over 12 hours. From 12 o'clock, 12 noon to 12 midnight, we do the recording. Because Equity Rules is that for every week, every day in the recording studio, you have to pay the actors a week's salary.
Wow.
So that's why you do it all in one day.
Yeah.
Which I personally think that rule needs to be changed, just because I think back then the CDs, that was a popular music of the time, and so the songs and the records sold, and now this is such a small market. It's a vocal market, but it's a small market, the theater world. You know, when you pay a star their weekly salary and then you have the ensemble of 18, it gets expensive.
Now, I'm also wondering, here you've got this musical, they were in it 3 years ago, and you've got new orchestrations. Do at least the actors, the singers, rehearse before they go in? Or are you first teaching them how it sounds now?
They know. It's pretty all sounds the same. No tunes were changed. It was, and they rehearsed and got it all up to speed, and then we had a rehearsal with the orchestra a couple of days beforehand.
Oh, you're allowed to do... Wait, but that's with just you and the orchestra, not the performers, right?
No, right.
Right, okay.
Honestly, it's the way I do when I do my solo recordings, but I don't have a rehearsal.
Well, you can rehearse anytime you want. Come on, that's...
Yes, yeah. But not with the orchestra.
Right.
You know, if I have an orchestra of 16 behind me, some of the times, the first time I hear the chart, the orchestra chart, is in that recording studio. You know, I hear them rehearse it a couple of times, and then I'm thrown in and I sing it.
Do you ever get thrown by that?
Oh, yes, a lot of times. You know, where key changes, where I think I'm going to hear a certain note in order to hear the key change, and then the orchestrator has done a different type of key change, and I'm just thrown completely. But, you know, you get a couple of takes.
Well, that's also one of, you get 8 hours with all these people. If you figure there might be now 15 songs in musicals these days, yes. I mean, you get less than half an hour. I mean, how does that work?
You were correct. You get about 15 minutes to 20 minutes on a song. And sometimes, you know, the bigger, harder songs, you give them a little bit longer time. But also with a show, with a Broadway show or an off-Broadway show that they've been doing it, they've been doing the show now for 6 months, so they know the songs.
Well, that's true, yes.
It's, you know, it's mostly just getting in. You do a couple of takes. You do, if there's a couple of fixes that you need to do, you just go back and do a couple of measures, the fixes and things that either the orchestra played a wrong note or the singers accidentally sang a wrong word or something, and then you just go on to the next song.
Well, so you're able also to have them do one line or something like that, and then you can fix in the editing.
Yes, we always like to do everything live. I mean, that's just one of the things our label, PS Classics, part of the experience of the singer is singing with the orchestra, and so we do everything live, and you do a take, do a safety, you know, just to make sure that you have the take, do a second take, and then any fixes that you need to do, and then that's it, move on to the next.
So you've got 4 minutes for a take, 4 minutes for the second take, 4 minutes to fix a boo-boo, and it's on to the next song. Well,
and then there's some songs that take a little bit longer. You know, all of a sudden the orchestrator will hear a note that he's never heard, that sitting in the pit he hasn't heard it, but when you hear it in a recording booth, you're like, oh my gosh, that note was wrong, I need to fix it. So you have to send him out there and he fixes the note and that kind of things. And we really plan out exactly what we're going to record. I mean, when we do a Sondheim show, I mean, Tommy goes through and says, sends a thing to Sondheim and says, okay, this is what I'm going to record. In this song, I'm going to do a little intro dialogue and then go directly into the song. If the song doesn't have a button in the show, it just kind of ends, he'll ask Steve to, you know, can we put a button so it'll just end, that kind of thing. If there's measures of repeats or there's a vamp, we'll say we'll try to do, let's just do two vamps and then go into the song instead of the usual six vamps and that kind of thing. And so we know pretty much exactly what we're going to record and do a schedule of the day. And we don't record the show usually in show order, just because, you know, as you only have the actors there for 8 hours, you've got to rearrange the schedules. And also, you're making the singer or the lead singer or the star, you know, sing for 8 hours straight or 6 hours straight.
On their day off, and then they have to be in the show. Well, no, not in this particular case.
Yeah, but on a show that's going on. So, you know, we write the actor and talk to the actor and just say, okay, what songs do you want? Can you sing in the beginning? And, you know, if you have your big 11 o'clock number, let's do that later so you don't blow out your voice and so you can sing all the delicate stuff beforehand. So you have to really, you know, work the schedule around the actors. And
In the shows that you that you have done, not counting the Yank, the most recent, but the other shows, especially ones that have been running or recent, have you ever had to do to bring someone back to pay the extra union dues to really do a do-over?
Yes and no. Most of the time they're really pretty good, and every once in a while you have to bring somebody back in. But yes.
Okay. I mean, you don't have to name names, but what happened? What went wrong?
Well, there's sometimes that the singer will be sick.
Oh.
Or if they're not a Broadway singer that's been doing Broadway shows, they're, you know, a TV actor or a movie actor, and they're not used to the grind of it. They'll be tired within, you know, 3 or 4 hours, and so they've got 4 more hours of singing, so you just kind of have to say, okay, you're going to have to come back in, or if you don't want to come back in, then this is the way the CD is going to be. Most of them know that CD is going to be out there forever, and they're more than happy to come back in.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely. We're talking with Philip Chafin of P.S. Classics, the label that does all these shows, Broadway, off-Broadway. Now, is Yank representative of, even financially, what it usually costs? Are Broadway a whole lot more? Shows that are still running a whole lot more? Is $150K kind of what it usually is for you guys?
No. That's usually an off-Broadway show, and this one, Yank, was probably a little bit cheaper. Most Broadway shows, depending on the cast, I mean, think of when we did Porgy and Bess.
Oh my God, right.
That's a large chorus, 2 CDs worth of music. The musicians rule, I can't remember what it is exactly, but for every 3 hours of recording of music, you can only take away, I think it's 15 minutes of music.
What? What the hell kind of rule is that?
So that's only 5 minutes of music for every hour. I could be wrong with this. This is off the top of my head.
Well, that can't be, because CDs now run 70, 80 minutes, and you've only got 8 hours. So then you'd be doing 10 minutes per hour.
Then you just still have to, you have to pay them for the time, even though...
My God.
So if you take 30 minutes of music away from a three-hour session, then you pay them for 2 sessions.
Oh, wow. You say you're doing Porgy and Bess. You're paying still Audra McDonald a week's worth of her Broadway salary?
Yes.
Holy cannoli.
And Imagine Follies, when you have 4 big names.
I mean, yeah, Bernadette Peters. Who else was in that revival of Follies?
Now you're going to ask me.
I'm sorry, but...
Danny Bernstein. Right. Oh, my gosh.
Danny Burstein, who was on this program, by the way, I will say. Wonderful gentleman.
Wonderful,
yes.
Man, yes.
Again, 2 CDs. So you had to do a double session on that.
How did we do that one? I believe we did it over 2 days, but, you know, we didn't bring everybody back in for the 2 days.
Oh, that makes sense. Just
you know, only the people that you can afford to bring back in for 2 days. So I think, I could be wrong, but I believe for the stars, you bring them in for that 1 day. And then the people that, the chorus and everybody, you bring them in for a second day and that kind of thing.
Now, we're talking about this idea of PS Classics, finding a show, you want to record it, you want to save it, you want to have theater geeks and gleeks and folks like that be able to have this album. We don't talk about sort of the other side of it, which is you're almost, but you're not the only label out there. There's Broadway, what do you call it, Masterworks Broadway, and also Shish Kaboom from Ghostlight. Do you ever have to fight them for a show that you want, or that's, how does that all work?
We don't really fight for them. I mean, it's pretty much known. I mean, every once in a while we'll get a show that, or we'll lose a show that we really wanted to another label, but everybody pretty much respects. They've been going after this show for a while, so I don't want to usurp them and that kind of thing.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, that's...
Maybe I'm too nice, and maybe that's why I'm poor.
Well, you're poor because, well, here's another question. How many people will buy the cast recording of a show like Yank or Zanga Don't or My Life with Albertine or, you know, First Lady Suite?
Well, Yank will do well, just I think, you never know, but I think it has a very big fan base, and I think people have been wanting this CD for a long, long time. So I really think people are really waiting for it. And Bobby Steggert, who started out and who's in the recording, I think people are really looking forward to hearing him. But some of the CDs we do just because we figure out a way to record them. We find how we get people to help us do the fundraising and that kind of thing. Just because there are CDs or shows that need to be recorded that we feel are just really wonderful, we find a way to get it done.
You're lucky if you even barely, almost, not quite break even on some of those shows.
Yeah. I mean, yes. We're always happy when we break even.
Wow.
You know, and but a lot of these shows, as I said, I'm an actor, and I'm auditioning for Broadway shows and doing everything, and everybody's like, well, how do you know what show you want to record? And I always say, the shows that I really want to record are shows that I will take time off of auditioning or a chance of getting a show because I think this show should be recorded. I think that makes sense.
Which kind of does, although you also have to think in terms of, well, first, you have a partner, by the way, Tommy Krasker. Yeah. You mentioned not him by name, but also the fact that it may not even be necessarily your taste, but for the history of theater and Broadway and off-Broadway, it's kind of wonderful now that most things, not all, do get recorded, even if they suck, you know?
Well, but as I said, I have to really, really want to record the show because I really like performing. So I really, it takes time away from that. So I always say if it's on our label, then we really wanted to record it because I took off time of going to auditions and that kind of thing.
Can I ask how many pressings you will do of a particular show? Would you do, say, 10,000 of Yank, 5,000, or and how much versus that of, like, the Frogs or Xanadu?
It all depends on the show. If it's an off-Broadway show, and also what kind of contract we have with the Musicians Union. With Yank, we have a contract with the Musicians Union where we can only print 10,000 copies.
Hmm.
Once we go over 10,000 copies, then we have to bump up the orchestra
oh,
up,
my God,
and the actors up to a different pay rate. For the first 10,000, there's a special rate.
Oh, so you would only, if you had printed more, then you have to pay more for, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we've done that with a couple of other off-Broadway shows. And, you know, you have to make the case to the Musicians Union and just saying, this is an off-Broadway show. It has a following, but it's currently not being produced on Broadway. So we probably won't sell this many. And then if you do, then you have to go to the Musicians and Union and say, here, we need to upgrade our contract.
Hey, look, you should only be lucky enough to be in that position that you've sold that many. We're talking with Philip Chafin, who is part or half of P.S. Classics here on Dave's Gone By, the radio program. Now, Dave's Gone By comes out of a university where a lot of the listeners are young folks. They're 15, 16, 17, 20 years old. And so they might be listening to all this and asking themselves, what is a CD? And I have to ask you, Philip Chafin, now in this age, CDs almost sound antiquated. What are we talking about as far as downloads and iTunes and all of that?
When we first started the company in 2000, we only had CDs. And then I believe, when did iTunes start up? Like 2003 or something? It's a whole different, you know, every once in a while you have to rethink how things are going to be coming out, and especially because with CDs, you sell them for a certain price.
Right.
And for downloads, I believe it's $9.99 compared to $14.99 for a CD. So you have to figure out, okay, we're going to be losing $5 on downloads. And also with downloads, people can only will only buy, you know, one song from the show.
For 99 cents.
It's a whole, I mean, a whole different equation. I think every 2 or 3 years we have to rethink how we do things, just how we can make money.
Will there be a point, or has there already been a point, where you've done an online-only release?
We've done one. Georgia Stitt.
Oh.
She wrote a song cycle. She just wanted it out there, and it's only available on download.
Now, how has that worked as opposed to putting out a CD of hers? Was it more economical? Did it make sense?
She just wanted that song cycle out, and I think it's a smaller niche, because we do have one of her CD of her work out, and it's all depends. It varies, and I'm not making any sense.
No, you're making perfect sense. It's a malleable thing. The whole record industry for the past 20 years has been in a flux kind of capacitor. I don't even know what the hell that means.
And I think people who buy show albums, a lot of times they want the booklet to go with it. They want the lyrics. They want to see pictures from the actual show. I mean, we do now have digital downloads where you can download the booklet, digitally download the booklet. But I think a lot of people who are show people want to have the actual booklet in hand and that kind of thing.
Have you ever done a vinyl release?
No, we have not.
Those are coming back. You never know.
Yes, you never know.
I have to ask, you're a show person, you're an actor, you're in musicals. How big is your vinyl collection of old cast recordings?
Well, it's down in the basement, and I probably have about 6 boxes.
Oh, that's that's about normal. I would figure it'd be more, considering what you do and doing with... Have you guys ever thought about long-out-of-print re-releases of things that were recorded, of other things way back then?
Well, we did a, what's her name? Charlotte Ray?
Charlotte Sweet? Charlotte's Web?
Charlotte Ray.
I said Charlotte Ray.
Charlotte Ray had a record out. She wanted it released on CD. It was out of print, and so we went and re-released it. As far as Broadway shows, we do a lot of... we haven't done a re-release of a CD except for that one, I believe. Tommy was a big fan. He used to work for the Gershwin Estate.
Oh.
And back in the 80s, Mrs. Gershwin said, you know, I have all these shows that Tommy had put together and found all the music and everything, but no one's ever going to hear it. So she formed a record company and started recording all these, like, Strike of the Band, Girl Crazy, Lady Be Good, and they would go into the studio and hire, like, a studio, you know, actors to come in and do it like a Broadway show, but all you would do is the recording. So when we started our own label, we started doing that. We did Kitty's Kisses, which is an old Gershwin musical we did. So these old Gershwin musicals, or even we have a Con Conrad musical.
Con Conrad? Who is that?
Con Conrad. He won the first Oscar for a song for The Continental.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
wow.
And he wrote a musical back in, when was it?
Oh, you should have this on the top of your head. Come on. Prepare, damn it. No, just kidding.
And he wrote this musical that played on Broadway. Maybe that's the one it's called. No, I can't remember what it's called. I'm trying to look online at the same time.
That never works. Never works on the radio. It's always like, But let me ask you, what are the specific duties? I said duty. No, but what, between you and Tommy Krasker, in other words, what does he do for the label? What do you do for the label? How do you intersect?
I pay the bills and keep everybody on track and keep everybody on budget, and he's the artistic one in this, in the company, figuring out what will be on the album, on a cast album, and doing the schedules and dealing with the unions and those kind of things. I just, once we get a schedule, I try to keep everybody on that schedule, and in the recording studio, I just remind people we're making a cast album. And when budgets come in, I try to keep everybody on budget and try to find a way to keep everybody on budget.
Right.
And that kind of thing.
Well, how did you meet Tommy Krasker? How did you hook up with him?
I was doing a show in Los Angeles. I did a Gershwin musical called Strike of the Band that did a three-month little tour, the Dorothy Chandler and some theater in Orange County and a theater in Pasadena. And he was working for the Gershwin Estate. And then many years later, or a couple years later, he was working for the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra.
Oh.
And he was doing these recordings for the Gershwin Estate for Mrs. Gershwin. And I wrote him a letter just saying, "Hi, my name is Philip Chaffin. I don't know if you remember me. I was in the cast of Strike for the Band. If you're looking, I would love to be on one of your albums if you have anything available." And he called me in. And that's how we met.
Nice. But how did it turn into not just you did the song, blah, 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 shook hands? How did it turn into more than that?
Well, he is my husband, so that kind of, so...
By the way, is that a real, did you have a ceremony? Are you officially married in the state of, I guess it's New York now?
Yes, we are official, yes.
Mitt Mazel, how long have you been married?
A year and a half.
Yay! Congratulations. Did Bloomberg officiate? Who officiated?
A preacher from Los Angeles. When I used to work in Los Angeles, I worked for a church, and he happened to be in town, and I just said, Tom, we decided to get married, and I just said, okay, I want it very casual, and I want it very small, and the service can only last 5 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I guess you don't have to stomp on the glass since they're not Jewish, so that takes away about a minute.
Tommy's Jewish.
Tommy's Jewish, yay!
Oh, yes.
Oh, I should have interviewed him. God damn it. Oh, well. Well, you've been pretty good. I'm kidding. Well, Mitt, are you going to... I have personal questions, of course. You're going to have kids or something? Well, adopt kids.
No. I like the freedom.
Sure, and the musicals are your baby.
Yes. And we've been together for 20 years now.
Oh, my gosh.
The way the record label started was Tommy was working for Nonesuch and a bunch of other labels doing like Mandy Patinkin and Audra McDonald and Dawn Upshaw, and we had never worked together, and we decided to do a CD. So we did the CD. It's a big band CD, and we've asked our accountant, what do we do to sell it? And he said, you have to form a company. So we formed a company named after our dogs at that time.
Oh, that's right. P.S. was not, it's not for Philip something. What were their names?
I had a dog named Please, like, please come, please sit.
Right, well, yes. Not even going to make a joke about that. And the other one?
And Tommy had a dog named Sumner.
Oh.
So, P.S. Sumner. So Please and Sumner, classic.
I assume the dogs are long gone, alas.
Yes.
But
yes.
The name, do you still have dogs?
I have a dog, yes, named Charity.
Charity?
No, Charity. Czerny, like the...
Composer or something?
Piano finger exercises.
Oh, yes. Yeah, very... Okay, yeah, you're a musician. No question about it. Hey, let me ask Philip Chaffin. I was going to call you Fievel Chaffin, but you're not Jewish, alas. However, I've never even thought of this man in years, but you were a Ray Conniff singer.
Yeah.
What was that like, and what was he like?
I sang with Ray for 3 years on and off. We mostly toured down in Brazil. when I was with him. It was a lot of fun. He was very nice.
Good. Okay.
He was, by the time I was with him, he was 70s, in his 70s, and so he was very nice.
No, what are you not saying? I mean, he's dead. You can say whatever you want. I mean, what are you not telling us?
There's a lot of people who are good fans of Ray Conniff, and I don't want to. I mean, he paid very well and helped me out.
All right, I was not expecting. Everybody thinks I'm looking for dirt or nasty thing. I'm looking for good or bad. I just want truth or true stories. I know nothing about this man.
Well, this is my story of, and people always go, okay. One time I was registered. We were at a hotel, and Ray came up to me and goes, "Ah, gee, Philip, have you always been that fat, or have you just gained weight?"
Oh, okay. A tactful man. When you figure maybe because his music was so inoffensive and muzak-y, he had to be a little tactless in his personal life just to have a release valve.
But I just think he was at a certain age where he just said things.
Okay.
So I think when you get to...
I'm at that age.
When you get to a certain age, you just kind of...
Well, I recommend everybody that in researching this... talk I'm having with Philip Chaffin, if you look on the wiki page for Ray Conniff, they have two pictures of him. And it's hilarious because one is from 1967, and he looks like something out of Robert McNamara's dream version of an American middle-aged man with the tie and the hair and the suit and whatever. And then there's like a picture of him 20 years later, and he's got this insane toupee. And he's also got, he looks like an old hippie. And you're like, what the hell? Who is this? You couldn't begin to see it's the same guy.
Yes, it was they call it the silver helmet, the page boy haircut. Is that the picture you have where he has like a page boy?
Yeah, it's on Wikipedia, and he's got a turtleneck sweater on, and he's holding a puppy or something like that, as opposed to a picture right next to it from just, 20 years earlier, not even, where he looked like this man wouldn't even know what a Democrat was,
Yes, the Brazilian musicians that we would tour with used to call it the silver helmet. We would have I'm just talking now.
Okay.
we would have these parties. Ray would have a party every once in a while, and it was mandatory that you kind of went to it. And so we always would go. And in Brazil, they always gave him like the presidential suite. So these were these huge hotel rooms. And one of the things I always wanted to do was take a picture, because he always had two wigs with him.
Okay.
And so while the others entertained him and just kind of kept him busy, I would go through his room and try to find the other wig.
Oh, shame on the ass.
Because I always wanted a picture, but I never found the other wig. I don't know where he kept it.
Wow. Perhaps it was a pubic wig. I don't even know what the heck that means. Oh, I'm so glad I asked about Ray Conniff. And let me ask about we talk so much about your label. Let us not discount the fact that you were also, as you say, an actor, a performer, a singer. You were on Broadway in King David.
Yes,
tell us about, they wanted that to be a big thing. It did not turn out to be a big thing, but tell us about that experience.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was my first Broadway show in the, I did Encores, and then I got King David. And that was after, 3 months in New York City, so I was very, very happy. It was a wonderful experience. Michael Ockrent was an amazing director. I don't think the audience really knew what to expect, because it was more of an oratorio, I would believe, Handel's Messiah kind of thing, but there was acting and movement, but the chorus was always there on stage, and so I always said it was sort of like an oratorio, and I don't think the audience knew exactly what to expect.
Yeah, unless you were to just hold the show between December 20th and 27th, nobody's going to come to an oratorio. Just in that little niche, maybe you can get a crowd. But it was a good experience for you overall.
And we opened up we were the first show at the New Amsterdam Theater. So that was kind of fun.
Is that where Lion King is now?
Yes.
Ah, cool, cool. And what about other theater experiences that you've had? Any hilarious stories or scary ones, fun ones?
Scary fun ones? Gosh. No scary ones. I'm still having fun.
Well, what was the last show you were in?
I did a Cole Porter review called Cole in Connecticut at the Music Theater of Connecticut in Westport.
Okay,
cool. A lot of fun with a great cast, four singers. I'm currently doing a holiday review in Bristol, Pennsylvania at the Bristol Riverside Theater.
Oh, good. Oh, they're still around. They've been around for ages, haven't they?
Yes, it's a wonderful theater.
Yes.
It's a nice little holiday concert.
Wonderful. Now, I have to, again, still go back to the fact that when you're recording all these shows, how much contact do you have with big stars and also the most important composers? Like, when you recorded the Passion CD,
yes.
Sondheim wasn't there with you?
He's always there. Steve's always there. But I think we've been recording Sondheim's shows now that he's very trusting and knows exactly how we work, and I think he likes the way we work. It's a very relaxed session. There's no, you know, pressure. We try to keep the pressure off, and I think Steve likes that.
But he's physically there with you for the session?
Yes.
Wow.
You know, because there's certain things. I mean, I believe on Follies, he changed a word on a song. He was like, I never liked. He finally thought of a word, and so he asked the singer to change the word that everyone has been singing of a song. I can't remember what song, and said, you know, I think the word needs to be this, so change it to this.
So tell us, please, and like, again, I'm not looking for dirt. Tell us wonderful stories about people like Sondheim, for crying out loud.
He's very nice to us. Understands exactly what we're going to do, and you know, as I said, we send him a list of how we want to record the show. He makes changes, and then we just go into the recording studio and we try to keep it relaxed. And I always amazed at the big stars. A lot of the movie and TV stars, they know exactly. I guess it's from doing movies and TVs and waiting in their trailer for so long, and then just getting up into the microphone and just. Or they are prepared and they know exactly where they're going. Like Angela Lansbury, it was just amazing to watch her just be there and then just step in front of the microphone and boom. Same thing with like Christine Ebersole.
Oh, well, yes.
Grey Gardens. I mean, it was just amazing. It was just watching her relax and then just step in front of the microphone and she's in character, ready to go. Alfred Molina was the same way for Fiddler on the Roof. He would sit there with a book at his chair and just read, and then you would ask him to, okay, it's time for your song, and he would just stand up and be prepared, and he would be like, that's always amazing for us.
Also, let's see, some other people that you would have just worked with, even for 8 or 12 hours, like you did Sondheim's The Frogs, and Nathan Lane was in that.
Yeah.
How was it? Now, he can be tremendous pro, but he can also be kind of prickly at people. How was he?
He was very nice. I think he was happy that it was being recorded. I mean, I think that show, there was a lot of pressure on him. I'm always, when you see these people and you know that they have, you know, like Audra McDonald, who has 5 Tonys and all these other things, and there's a lot of pressure because every performance, everyone wants to see those 5 Tony performances, you know, her credentials. So you feel for them because it's so much pressure on them, and there's a lot of money behind, you know, being riding on them and to make the show. And so they've always been, I always amazed at the big stars, and they've always been very, very nice. I can't say, trying to think of any that we've had conflicts with, but
good. That's wonderful to hear. I'm also, as always, looking for amusing anecdotes or funny or really lovable or wonderful anecdotes too.
Oh gosh, let's see. I'm sorry.
Oh no, it's okay.
They'll come to me later, but right at this moment, Christine Ebersole was just amazing. Just Angela Lansbury. Antonio Banderas.
Oh, for nine.
For nine. That was our first musical that we ever recorded. Maury Yeston, we had just done the Maury Yeston songbook, and Maury's nine was being revived, and he said, you know, you should put a bid out for it just to see if anything happens. And lo and behold, I believe it was like on a Thursday morning, we got the call that says, we would like you to do it. And I remember sitting at the table, at the breakfast table, going, you know, we're all excited, just like, yay, we got our first, this is going to be so exciting. And then a minute later, the panic set in of just, oh my goodness, we're recording a Broadway show with Antonio Banderas. And
a bunch of, who else was in that? There was Mary Stuart Masterson was in there.
And Chita Rivera.
Oh my God, Chita Rivera! Oh, any stories about Chita?
She was one of those amazing artists who just stepped up to the microphone, did a take, and you're like, okay. There's no need to do, you know, you have to do a second one just to make sure that you have it, but, you know, she just nailed it the first take.
Do you like to do the whole thing straight through live, but is there a time when you'll do basically the first take, but then you'll take a line or two out of the second take just because it's bigger?
Oh, yes. I mean, because a lot of times the performance might be just amazing on the first take, but the orchestra might have muffed up a note somewhere, so, you know, you have to take... Because nowadays you can take the orchestra from the second take and add it to the singer's take on the first take.
Wow.
Those kind of things. If it's too fast, you can slow it down a little bit. You can sort of fix notes if the singer sang a wrong note, or if you have an actor who's not really a singer... You can kind of change the notes a bit to make it fit.
Right? Do auto-tune the people? Do you do that?
Yes.
Wow.
But we try not to do it too much, just because most of them can hit the notes.
I mean, it's more about personality. I mean, if you listen to the old shows, a lot of them, you know, Jack Klugman was in Gypsy, and Jack Klugman is no singer. But when I hear Herbie, I hear Jack Klugman. So, that, I mean, it's okay, is what I'm saying. So, I think you probably agree with me on that. We're just a couple of more minutes with the wonderful Philip Chaffin of PS Classics. Do you have a favorite show that you have recorded of all your cast albums so far?
Favorite show? I believe my favorite show was... Follies was amazing, just working with all those actors, and just... Follies is just one of those amazing shows.
Well, yes.
So I believe Follies was probably one of my favorites.
And do you have a favorite show of all time?
Favorite show of all time would be Oklahoma.
Why Oklahoma?
Because it was one of the first shows I ever did, playing Curly. And I grew up in the South in Louisiana, Mississippi, and I used to sing songs from Oklahoma on the tractor, cutting the green. That was good.
Now, you weren't in Louisiana, Mississippi. You were in Louisiana, and your family was also in two different places.
Yes.
And I read somewhere that you were one of six kids, and the irony of now that you're a performer and a singer, but when you were a kid, what, you couldn't get a word in edgewise?
Yes, I had five brothers and sisters. My oldest sister is 7 years older than I am, and my grandmother used to say that I didn't speak until I was five because they all spoke for me. All I did was point or just nod or shake my head, and they would go on, and they just didn't really knew I could speak until I got older.
And when was the first time you opened up your mouth and sang and knew that you could sing better than just everyone around you?
I was in high school, and there was an audition for The Sound of Music at a local community theater, and I wanted to go for it, and I asked my mom to play the piano and for me just to see if I could go through the song, and she heard me sing and said, you can sing. And later on, that summer, I auditioned for the community theater at another place that happened to be the dean of music at LSU was the music director, and he said, if you keep studying voice, I will give you a full scholarship to LSU.
Woof.
So,
yeah.
I guess I'm a singer.
Mid-mazel, that's so cool. And getting just a little bit personal again, because I'm a little curious about this. You love musical theater, you're a singer, your family, you know, had this big family down south. How did they feel about, at what point, I assume they know that you are gay.
Yes.
When did you tell them? Was it okay? Was it a big deal?
Etc. I always say it's a Southern thing. It's, they know, but we don't think we really talk about it.
So they didn't come to New York for your wedding, blah, blah, blah.
I kept it very private, so none of my family came.
Okay. I mean, but they know, but it's don't ask, don't tell, almost, is what you're kind of,
yeah.
Sort of. All right. I mean, even your brothers and sisters, or are they your generation, and they're cooler with it?
Oh, they're cooler with it. Yes.
Good. I'm just curious. I was wondering about that. And I know, I'm sorry, I've neglected to say a couple of things. First of all, if people want to buy your CDs and also the CDs of PS Classics, the cast recordings, they're not soundtracks, people. They're original cast recordings. There's a difference. Look it up. Where can they go to buy them?
Amazon.com, PSClassics.com, iTunes, pretty much any BarnesandNoble.com, at Barnes & Noble, pretty much any online store, it is available there.
And, unfortunately, and forgive me for not asking you this whole time, but I'm going to ask now, tell us, Philip Chafin, about your fourth record that's just come out. It's a CD. It's dedicated to the music of Dorothy Fields. Tell us who she was, and tell us about your album.
Well, Dorothy Fields was a lyricist. She wrote from the 20s until the 70s. Everyone knows her songs, like I'm in the Mood for Love. What else?
I'm blanking at the moment, too. But she threw out a lot of major stuff. But what made you want to do a CD of her songs?
The lyrics, I really loved just the way her words seemed to come trippingly easily out of my head, you know. There's some lyricists where you really have to think about it, and I believe her lyrics are just so well written that they're easy to sing, they're easy to memorize, and Tommy was a big Dorothy Fields fan. And back in college, he was trying to put a review and a bunch of stuff together. And so he started collecting all of Dorothy Fields' music. One day he just said, why don't we look at these Dorothy Fields songs and just see if any of them catch your eye? And we sat at the piano for many days and just, we had a no pile, a yes pile, a maybe pile. The yes pile was huge. And then we had to go through it.
I had a huge yes pile this morning, but that's very different. Sorry. What's the difference between, like, is it just an instinctual thing of knowing a song is yes for you and no for you?
Yes. And then also there's Tommy who kind of goes, you should really reconsider this one. Just some of the tunes and some of the words just catch me. And so I just like it. So I'm like, okay, this is, I can't explain it. They just kind of catch. And I go, okay, I like this song.
This is now your fourth album. It's called?
Something Real Special.
Something Real Special. And then some of your other albums, I had the list here somewhere. There was Warm Spring Night. What were the other two?
Warm Spring Night, which is Broadway songs. And Warm Spring Night, that's one of the songs from King David. And then I did a CD called When the Wind Blows South. And those are mostly songs with a little southern tinge, I guess. Just putting my southern roots on songs. And then the first CD that we ever did for the company was Where Do I Go From You, which was a big band CD with a big band and different orchestrators and things like that.
Actually, it just occurs to me, you were raised, as you say, in Louisiana and Mississippi, and yet no one would know from the way you talk. Did you take elocution lessons? Did you learn to talk in American standard English thing?
When I graduated from college, I knew I had to get out of the South. And so I literally got into a car, and they were going to Los Angeles. If they had wound up in New York, going to New York, I would have gone to New York, but they were going to Los Angeles, so I went to Los Angeles. I had an audition for Mary Martin, and she was doing a scholarship thing in Palm Springs. And I went to the audition, and she said, honey, you have a lovely voice, but you've got to lose that accent. So I left the room, and then I shyly knocked on the door and asked what I should do. And she gave me a list of names and schools and things, and to them, and I lost my accent that way.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked that question. What a story! Plus, we were talking to a press agent a couple of weeks ago, and she was telling wonderful stories about Mary Martin. She just seems like the most fabulous lady.
Oh, it was very sweet of her. I mean, I used to work for Edie Adams when I lived in Los Angeles.
Edie Adams, oh my God, the wife of Ernie Kovacs. And
Yes. It was after the Northridge earthquake. She had all these clothes that she had kept in her house up from like every show that she'd ever done, every TV show. I was working at a costume shop at the time, and she'd come in. I needed extra money, and I think she was happy to have an actor who needed work. And I hung up all of her paintings that had fallen down, and hung up all of her clothes, because she had this huge room that was just full of clothes that she had, and my job was to kind of put them in order and put them back up. And one of the jobs was Ernie Kovacs. She had a lot of his clothes, and before she put them in a warehouse, she took a Polaroid of me in Ernie Kovacs' clothes, so she would know what exactly was in each box.
Wow. Oh, my God.
She was wonderful. I always laugh because she won two Tonys, and she would come into the costume shop, and she had these two Tonys on a necklace. And, you know, she always like, yeah, they...
Wait a minute. You mean the actual or little mock-ups of her two
Tonys? No, these were the actual Tonys.
That's a big thing. Have you...
Well, these were now they put them on a little stand and everything like that, but she was very proud of her Tonys, and she wore them. She was like, she said, you know, the Tony people don't want me to be wearing them, but I won them. They're mine. I'm wearing them.
She's right.
And she wore them. They was wonderful.
Oh, my God. Oh, I should have asked more questions about your early life and your stories in Los Angeles. These are wonderful. Do you have, like, one or two more? Because I know I've kept you for so long, but these are great.
Oh, God. See, now I'm on the pressure.
Other stars that you intersected with, worked for, worked with?
Julian Prowse. I did know one of my first union shows was with Julian Prowse, and she was amazing. Just a super sweetheart. Karen Morrow was one of my teachers in Los Angeles. I took a class with Karen Morrow and Charles Nelson Reilly as teachers.
Oh my, how was he? Wow, he must have been fun as heck.
He was wonderful. I love my acting teacher here in New York, and I've learned tons. But I think when I was in Los Angeles and young, working with Charles Nelson Reilly, just all those, he had wonderful stories, but just his acting, I don't think people knew how wonderful of an actor he really was.
Because all we know him from, if you didn't see him as Bud Frump, all you kind of knew him from was game shows.
Yes, yes. And he directed lots of operas, and he directed a Broadway show. But he was an amazing person to work with. And Karen Morrow was the same way. I studied with her until she just finally said, look, you have to go to New York. I can't teach you anymore. You're being wasted here in Los Angeles. You have to go to New York. So Karen Morrow was pretty much the reason I came to New York.
And everything has happened since then. All these wonderful things in your life, Philip Chafin. All I can say is it has been an absolute delight to be talking about theater and musical theater and your life here in the neighborhood. Everybody remember, psclassics.com. Look for Philip Chafin's four albums on there, including the new one, Something Real Special, a tribute to Dorothy Fields. And also look for him in shows, and look for shows on their label. Philip, what can I say? It's been a joy.
Oh, thank you. It's been fun.